Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have Tommy Tucker here at the New Orleans Convention Center with all the Super Bowl festivities going on. It'll be a beautiful day today. Spring-like, really, through next Tuesday, and that's all you need to know. It was a fog alert issued last night, but I'm not hearing about a lot of it other than some people texting in some patches of it on the causeway. This whole name, image, and likeness thing will put some fog in your head. If you have a hard time understanding it, welcome to the party. Mark Conrad joins us now, Associate Professor of Law and Ethics at Fordham, author of The Business of Sports, Off the Field, In the Office, On the News. He's our guest in the Treasure Chest Casino virtual power seat. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Let's talk about Livy Dunn and the suit that she filed, and maybe take a step back first and talk about the House settlement, which has nothing to do with the House of Representatives, although it does involve Congress, right?
Well, actually, no. It involves a settlement for
NCAA, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it actually involves a lawsuit, a settlement of a lawsuit by an athlete called House representing many other athletes, and the settlement was agreed to by the lawyers for both sides. The question is going to be, will the settlement be approved? And that will be determined in April by the trial judge. The settlement involves some back pay for athletes, but it also involves a compensation scheme for present athletes going into the future that is capped at about $20 million per, up to $20 million per school. So that's been one of the centerpieces of the objections to that settlement, among other things. But most of the class of plaintiffs seem to have agreed and agreed onto the settlement. So I think it's a good bet that the judge is going to approve this settlement.
I tripped over myself with Congress before. What I was trying to say is, at what point does Congress get involved with any of this, or will they?
Well, that's a good question, because with the changes in Congress and the changes in administration, there's a possibility that Congress could vote a law that will give the NCAA some additional legal protections. Whether that will affect this case or not is a real question, but it will give the NCAA protection maybe against other lawsuits on antitrust law. And Senator Cruz is going to be the chair of the Senate committee dealing with that, and he's been sympathetic to some legislation going through, and that could be a change. So I think we have to watch Congress and see, and also watch the attitude of the president regarding this particular issue. So there is a possibility that for future cases, it could be limited by this potential law passed by Congress and signed by the president.
I hope this doesn't come as a severe shock to the audience, but sometimes politics and the judiciary can kind of overlap. When it comes to the partisanship here, basically the Republicans would be on the side of the NCAA, if you wanted to make it that simple, and the Democrats would be on the side of the players, almost like a union and a company kind of thing?
Yeah, on a 30,000-foot approach, I'd say that is generally more correct than not. But having said that, you know, a Republican-based Supreme Court ruled against the NCAA a few years ago, and Justice Kavanaugh in particular was very critical of its business operations. So I don't think the NCAA necessarily has all the support from Republicans, or and many Republicans may feel that the NCAA doesn't deserve this kind of law. But more likely than not, I think that Republicans are going to be against the idea of college athletes being unionized as employees and getting a salary. I think that is will be likely to change because the labor board is going to change in terms of its personnel, and many of the advocates on that end, which is not part of the case, but it's part of another kind of proceeding, will be gone. So I think that area is going to be, at least for the time being, going to be suppressed. In fact, attempts to unionize have been withdrawn in anticipation of rejection by the full National Labor Relations Board.
You know, if I had heard that phrase years ago, I might still be married and not be buying my house for the second time. From a 30,000-foot approach, that's somewhat accurate. I wish I knew that phrase then, Professor. So let me take a step back on all of this. And for people that have not been following this closely, because, man, it's very complicated stuff. Let me take a break here real quick, and then we'll pick it up. We come back. You can talk about the whole name, image, and likeness thing, and maybe we can zoom down to 20,000 feet and get an overview of how we got from there to here and what it means in the future as far as, because what we're talking about here is players that have already played getting compensated for their efforts and then moving forward what the landscape looks like. We're talking to Mark Conrad, Associate Professor of Law and Ethics at Fordham, author of The Business of Sports, Off the Field, In the Office, On the News. If you have any questions or comments, text them in to the Oakenhart Jeweler Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870. We're live from the Morial Convention Center at the Host Committee's Media Center on Radio Row, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. A quick break for traffic now on WWL. Quickly back to Mark Conrad, Associate Professor of Law and Ethics at Fordham, author of The Business of Sports, Off the Field, In the Office, On the News. Tommy Tucker on WWL, live from the Morial Convention Center at the Host Committee's Media Center on Radio Row, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. So, Professor, if you can, in the minutes that we have left, tell us how we got from there to here with this House settlement and what it means for, where is the dividing line where this settlement addresses players that have had their time, and then moving forward, does it have anything to do with name, image, and likeness?
It sort of evolved over time because the NCAA, you know, was very strict about any kind of compensation and considered student athletes as amateurs. But starting about 10 years ago, a number of lawsuits started chipping away at that. Not specifically opening up the door to NIL, but coming pretty close. And the NCAA, just one day after the Supreme Court ruling, simply said, you know, we are going to change the rules because of the fear of more lawsuits, number one. And number two, more and more states were passing laws allowing NIL. And the NCAA realized that they were in an untenable position. But the question is how you do it. The question is how you organize it. The question is how the schools control it. And that's really open right now. And, you know, any attempts to restrict that, you know, have been the subject of lawsuits. And the House case was just one of a number of lawsuits regarding NIL and how NIL is awarded. And the settlement pretty much said that it'll be considered as part of back compensation for students in some kind of financial standard. And also it said that students more generally in the future could potentially get some kind of quote-unquote compensation. They don't call it salary, but it's more than NIL. But at this point, we really have almost an open market, and we don't know where this is going to go because it's just been, you know, the professionalization of college sports is upon us. And the last 2-3 years, you know, the events have been just swirling, and I can see lots of fans really confused from the model that used to be. So really stay tuned. I think that the settlement will be approved, even though there are some reasonable objections to it. And then we will go from there, and there'll be even more questions, I think, coming up in the future.
Only 30 seconds left. Going forward, does the Commerce Clause have anything to do with this as far as congressional action?
Well, Congress certainly has the power, you know, to pass laws regulating college sports. Absolutely. They're engaged in interstate commerce. They negotiate TV deals, streaming deals, etc. They sell tickets. They travel. So there would be no constitutional problem in dealing with that. But the question is, what kind of law would be passed? And do you give the NCAA basically a get-out-of-jail card, meaning an antitrust exemption, prohibiting future cases?
Thank you, Professor.
Of that type.
Thank you, sir.